You would open up your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 13. 2 Samuel chapter 13. Now, as we began chapter 13, it seems as if the narrator or the author here has turned his focus more to the children. You know, Amnon, Tamar, Absalom. Absalom's going to be the main character probably here over the next two or three chapters. But all this really began way back in chapter 10. And chapter 10 is where we have David trying to extend kindness to the Ammonite king, Nahash. And that kindness is spurred or spurned, and they mock the messengers and humiliate them, and it causes a war. And that war is where we have David sending Joab out in chapter 11. David sends all the armies and Joab out, and he remains at home in Jerusalem. And that's where he sees Bathsheba. He lusts after her. He sins for her, and he lays with her. She becomes pregnant. So David sends for Joab, trying in an attempt to get Joab to lay with his wife so he would think he was the father of the child. That doesn't work, so he gets Uriah. He gets Uriah drunk, trying to get Uriah to lie with his wife so he would think that it's his child. Uriah refuses, therefore David sends a letter by the hand of Uriah, putting him at the front of the hottest battle and then pulling back from him so that Uriah would be struck down and killed. David then takes Bathsheba, marries her, tries to present everything as if this is a legitimate marriage and the kid's his, and that the Lord strikes the child so that the child dies. But the Lord also tells David that the sword will never depart from your house. And this is the fruit we're seeing here in chapter 13. You know, chapter 13 began with David's son Absalom had a sister whose name was Tamar. And David had another son. His eldest son was a boy named Amnon. And Amnon lusted after Tamar, Absalom's real sister. And he ended up seducing her in a ploy to get her in and so he could lay with her, and he actually raped her. And David seemingly does nothing. He does nothing to confront Amnon for his treatment of his daughter. He does really nothing to Tamar to console her or to comfort her. Actually, Absalom is the one who has to take this in. But Absalom hated his brother Amnon for the way he treated his sister. We see that in the very last verse, 13:22, but Absalom spoke to Amnon neither good nor bad. But Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. Then we pick up in verse 23. After two full years, Absalom had sheep shears at Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold, your servant has sheep shears. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant." But the king said to Absalom, "No, my son, let us all not go, lest we be burdensome to you." He pressed him, but he would not go, but he gave him his blessing. So you see, Absalom didn't say anything to Amnon for two full years, neither good nor bad. He took this hatred and just waiting for the opportune time and the right circumstances to kill Amnon. Two full years. It's not like he just flew off the handle in a fit of rage and killed him. This is planned, meticulous, calculated hatred. Patience. 2 years. And he had been plotting this revenge since the day Amnon violated his sister. We're going to read that later on. From the day it happened, he had been planning this. From the day it happened. And it says that they had sheep shears. He goes, "I got sheep shears at Baal Hazor," which is near Ephraim. And then he wanted to invite all the king's sons. So that don't really make a lot of sense to us. You know, why would you invite people to come watch your sheep be sheared? And that's a tongue twister there, but If you go back to 1 Samuel 25, we'll see kind of a tradition that they had, or a custom, I guess, they had in Israel at this time. 1 Samuel 25, you'll know this story. This is about Abigail and Nabal and David. And David, he goes in verse 7 and 8. It says, "I hear that you have shears. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm. And they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have in your hand to your servants and to your young son David," or to your son David. So basically, when they would shear sheep, it was just a celebration they would have. And they would throw a big feast. That's why David said, "Look, we come on a feast day. Would you mind giving us some of your bread? We've protected your men the whole time they were in the desert." And you know Nabal is going to answer David, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed from my shears and give it to men whom I do not know who he is?" You know, so he's real arrogant, blunt, and a fool for doing this. And you actually read on down in verse 36, it says, Abigail came to Nabal, and he said, "Behold, he held a feast. Nabal held a feast in his home like the feast of a king." So this is just what they would do. It was almost like when you would have your gardening and when you would bring the harvest in, you would celebrate. That's what they were doing here. They were celebrating, holding a feast. Same thing here. Absalom's holding a feast, and he goes to his father and he asks his father to join him in the feast. David declined. He didn't want to be a burden to Absalom. He probably would have brought along quite a large entourage, and it just would have been a bit too much for Absalom. So he declines. And it says Absalom pressed him. He urged him to go, but David still said no. David still said no, but he did give him his blessing. Did Absalom know, and you're going to see as this thing kind of unfolds here, did Absalom know that David would decline? Did he have that? Did he know that my father, or did he have intentions on killing David also? You know, I don't know. I know 2 chapters later, he's hunting down David. 2 chapters later in 2 Samuel 16, David's saying, "My own son seeks my life," as he's running from Absalom. So I don't know how far Absalom's hatred and how thick his plot was. We know he was gunning for Amnon. But he did invite David, and David said no, but gave him his blessing. Then he goes to verse 26. Then Absalom said, "If not, since you're not coming, David, if not, please let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said, "Why should he go with you?" You know, most commentators believe that this seemed to be the next logical request since Amnon was the prince in waiting. Amnon was the eldest son of David. So when the king wouldn't come, at least let the next in line come. Father, Amnon was the next in line to the king, and Absalom had kept his hatred hidden up to this point. You know, he hadn't spoke neither good nor bad, it says, for the full 2 years. He's kind of concealing his hatred here. But David seems to have some suspicions. Why would you want Amnon? Why would he come with you? But it says Absalom urged him, and finally David's going to give in and allow Amnon to go. It says, but Absalom pressed him in verse 27 until he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. You know, in the Septuagint right here, it has one more addition. It says, and Absalom made a feast like a king's feast, which would actually fit right in to what it seems like they did every time they threw these feasts or every time they would shear sheep. And then we'll pick up and read 28 and 29. Then Absalom commanded his servants, "Mark when Amnon's heart is merry with wine. And when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not fear. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." Be courageous and be valiant. Okay. So he tells him, look, he's revealing his plot to his servants. So it may be unlikely they really didn't know what they were getting into. And then he tells them, look, my brother's heart is merry with wine. I want you to strike him and kill him. And don't worry about the consequences. That's going to be on me. I'm going to bear the brunt of the responsibility. And they wait until Amnon is drunk. One commentator wrote this. He said, David committed adultery, made Uriah drunk, and then murdered him. Amnon committed incest. He is made drunk, and then he is murdered. You kind of see some real similarities in the way the things David had done kind of returning back on him. David allowed Tamar to go to Amnon in the first part of this chapter, and David here is allowing Amnon to go to Absalom. Let's pick up and let's read 29 through 31. The servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose and each mounted his mule and fled. While they were on their way, news came to David, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons and not one of them is left. Then the king arose, tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants who were standing by them tore their garments also. So look, it's interesting that when he strikes and kills Amnon, that the brothers, as far as they know, they're going to kill all of them. So all the king's sons, they just flee. They jump up a road, they jump on their mules, and they head out of town. And when news comes to David, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons. I guess we would call that fake news. You watch my TV. But anyway, they thought all the king's sons, not one of them is left. And so David tore his garments, lay on the ground, and just mourned, and they all seemed to follow the king. They saw the king's heartache, and so they all tore their clothes and mourned with David. But it's interesting, David didn't react with disbelief. Like, I can't believe that. You know, it's almost like he knew Absalom was capable of such evil. You know, it seems like he knew that the way he reacted strictly with mourning, no disbelief. Even his servants tore their clothes and mourned. And just imagine how his heart had to drop. It's so similar to Job. How Job heard the news that he had lost all his children. And he mourned. David, same thing here. He just lost all his sons. And we're going to read on and we're going to find out most likely how that rumor got to David before the sons returned. But we go on in verse 32 or 31. Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants who were standing with him tore their garments. But Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, said, let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day he violated his sister Tamar. Now therefore, let not my lord the king so take it to heart as to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead. So it says from day one, Absalom had been seeking to do this from day one, 2 years. But I always wonder, why wasn't Joab there? Joab was family, one, but he wasn't there at this feast. And two, how did he know that Amnon was the only one dead? You know, Jonadab was the one who gave his brother Amnon, or his cousin Amnon, the skill set or the play to kind of get his sister Tamar into the bedroom with him where he could rape her. I just only wonder if Jonadab had a part in this. I have no idea, but he knew that no, it's not all your sons, David. It's only going to be Amnon, because Absalom's hated Amnon for 2 years. But Jonadab conveniently leaves out his role in this incident. And Absalom loves his sister Tamar. You know, we know that because in the next chapter, it gives the sons and daughters of Absalom, and it says he has 3 sons and 1 daughter, and he names his daughter Tamar. He names his daughter after his sister. So I think he really did love her. Some people would actually say that Absalom used Tamar as a way to kill his brother Amnon so he would be next in line to the throne. I don't think that. I think he really loved his sister. And Amnon had done wrong. Now, Absalom could have learned the vengeance is the Lord's and let the Lord handle it, but instead he decides to take matters into his own hands and, you know, plots for 2 years until the perfect circumstances line up. But then if we read on in verse 34, but Absalom fled, and the young man who kept watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, many people were coming from the road behind him by the side of the mountain. So that's why I was saying, you know, maybe when they fled there in their haste, they went back a different way. Maybe they just got so confused they just came back a different way. But it seems as if they came back a different way than the way they went. They came back from behind, from the road behind him, is what it says, by the side of the mountain. So maybe that's how word got back before the sons returned, is one guy had bolted back the way they came, and the rest of them kind of went back around the side of the mountain, whether they thought Absalom had an ambush set up for them. You know, if we get out of here alive, who knows what he's got that's going to jump out of the bushes and kill us on the way home. So they went back a different way than the way they came. Whether they did this because of panic or whether they did this strategically, I don't know. Then we get to verse 35. And Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's sons have come. As your servant said, so it has come about. So he's making sure he gets the credit. Jonadab is, you know. King, I told you. I told you, it's just Amnon. Don't worry, all your sons aren't dead. It's just Amnon. Sure enough, the sons returned, and then Jonadab goes to the king and says, it's just like I said, king. Just like I said it happened, that's how it come about. But it's funny if you read it, if you were to look at Jonadab's name and see how many times he's going to be used in Scripture, his thirst for influence, his thirst for power is what I think we see all the way through this chapter. And he'll try to attain that by any means necessary. But he disappears from the pages of Scripture after chapter 13. You won't read about Jonadab anymore. Not this Jonadab anyway. So whatever he was after, seems like he never attained it. Verse 36. And as soon as he had finished speaking, behold, the king's sons came up and lifted their voices and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very bitterly. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son day after day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom because he was comforted about Amnon since he was dead. So what it says here is Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. Make you wonder why he went there. Go back to 2 Samuel 3. Real quick, this won't take long. 2 Samuel chapter 3. We start in verse 2. These are the sons born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Hinoam of Jezreel. His second was Chileab of Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. The third, Absalom, the son of Micah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So you see, Absalom's grandfather was the king of Geshur. So that's why Absalom went there. You know, you see, it says he, get back there. I turned my page too quick, guys. It says, Absalom the son of Micah. So Micah is the daughter of Talmai, the king of Geshur. So it's little doubt that he is the grandson of this king of Geshur. So when he had killed Amnon and most likely thought that his life would be sought next, he fled to Papaw, hid out over there. And he remained there for 3 years, it says. For 3 years he stays with his father-in-law, with his grandfather over there in Geshur. Then we get to verse 39, and it's the way it's kind of worded here is a little bit unique, and it says the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom because he was comforted by Amnon since he was dead. But the NIV translates it this way. It says the king David longed to go to Absalom. David wanted to go to Absalom because he was consoled concerning Amnon's death. You know, Amnon's death, he had finally come to grips with it. He was finally consoled over the death of Amnon, and now he longed for Absalom. He longed for his son, Absalom. And you actually get that in chapter 14, verse 1. The very next verse says, now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, knew that the king's heart went out to Absalom. So David longed for Absalom. But for 3 years, he does nothing to go get him and bring him in. Now we're going to read that in the next chapter. But again, not casting stones at David, because we can learn from this. There are many good leaders, bad parents. Now whether we think that David refused to discipline his children because he had committed some of the very sins that his children had committed. For instance, if maybe you struggle with alcohol as a youth, maybe you feel like you can't come down on your son for struggling with that same sin. Well, that's just wrong. You can. You know, he should learn from your mistakes. And David should have been the father figure to these men that he just wasn't. He just seems to be absent, or seems to be kicking the can down the road and just not addressing some of these issues here. But it's easy to see several men, whether it be a president, whether it be a CEO of a corporation, whether it be a football coach. I want to say, and I'm not going to name his name because I'll mess it up, but he watched game film relentlessly. Missed Thanksgiving, every Thanksgiving, missed every Christmas, because that was football season. And he never once saw his own kid play ball. Not one time. He's a football coach, watching film day after day, and yet he don't even watch his own son play. Because he's so committed to his work that he refuses to be a father. Men who would rather know what's happening on ESPN or Fox than know what's going on in their own children's life. We see it. It makes you wonder, if you show the same type of care at work that we show at home, would we have been fired a long time ago? But David here seems to be just absent. He didn't do anything to Amnon for this heinous crime. He doesn't do anything to his daughter Tamar to kind of console or comfort her. And then when Absalom's gone, even though he longed for Absalom, he does nothing. He does nothing. Joab has to provoke him through chapter 14 to get him to go get Absalom. So, again, these are the fruits of that sin that David committed, and where the Lord had promised that the sword should never depart from the house of David is coming to fruition. So, again, if you came here expecting a feast, you may leave hungry, but if you wanted a snack, you may have been satisfied. But that's the end of chapter 13. Lord willing, we'll get to 14 next week. So, would please stand. Collins, would you please?